Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson Victor Bring. Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB. Inside MLB.
Good evening, Inside MLB fans. My name is Benson Fetcher, and I will be your host tonight. It is Friday, March 4th, 2016. We have a very exciting show to get to. So without further ado, let's get right into it. So, let's start off talking about Andrew Miller and how, because of the Aroldis Chapman suspension, Yankees general manager Brian Cashman confirmed that Miller will close while teammate Aroldis Chapman serves his 30-game suspension. With the opportunity to close until the first half of May, Miller has amassed double-digit saves while handling the closer duties in the Bronx. Even as a setup man, his combination of a high strikeout rate with elite ratios was enough to put him on the radar in my mind. And the early season uptick in value will increase his stock even further. Now, Andrew Miller, he had a dominant 2014 season. Absolutely dominant. Dominant, right? His 2014 season earned him a four-year, $36 million contract with the Yankees. But despite the price tag, he entered the year figuring to either be in a timeshare for the closer role with Don Betances or to serve as a setup man. Though manager Joe Girardi hesitated to officially tab an official closer early in the season, Miller was the clear winner of the competition, as he proved his 2014 campaign was no fluke. The lefty converted 36 of 38 save opportunities, working to a 2.04 ERA while reaching 100 strikeouts for the second year in a row, as he boasted a 120 strikeout to walk ratio in 61 and two-thirds innings of work. Aroldis Chapman, who the Yankees acquired in the offseason, received a 30-game suspension for a domestic incident. So Miller should assume the closing duties until the second week of May. However, at that point, he will likely be related to a setup role while Chapman taking the ninth. Now let's move to our next guy, which is Andrew Miller's teammate, Aroldis Chapman. And we've been talking about how he suspended 30 games in relation to domestic violence incident over the offseason. And he reported, though, that he would appeal any suspension handed him. But he will apparently accept his bail without appealing. The hard-throwing lefty didn't end up facing any criminal charges for the incident. But MLB's new domestic violence policy, which was implemented last season, still grants Commissioner Rob Manfred the ability to levy suspension in such cases. Chapman will continue to play during spring training and will be eligible to make his Yankees debut on May 9th, at which time he figures to slot in as a team's closer. Let's talk about Aroldis Chapman in general for a minute. I mean, he has struck out more than 40% of the batters he's faced for four consecutive years now, while walking just 11.9% of the hitters he's faced over the last 2 years. I mean, opposing hitters has been below 200 for 4 years in a row as well. But all of his on-field accomplishments, really, they were overshadowed this offseason when the Reds attempted to trade to the Dodgers, only to see the trade get overturned due to an incident where Chapman was accused of domestic violence. A deal to the Yankees was later completed. And then Chapman was hit with a 30-game suspension for the commissioner's office, which he accepted. This will keep Chapman out until the second week of May. And Andrew Miller will presumably handle the ninth inning until that time. Make sure to discount Chapman at least a couple of rounds. But, I mean, Chapman, he really screwed up here. He had it perfect. Four dominant years in a row. Struck out over 40% of the batters he faced. And then this? It just overshadows everything. I mean, he could be a Dodger right now. The Reds are probably mad at Chapman, too. that's all the Chapman time we have for today. We have to take a break. But when we come back, we are going to be talking about the Marlins, Christian Yelich, and Carter Capps. Yankees closer debacle with the Chapman being suspended, Andrew Miller stepping in, and what will happen May 9th. But now it's time to move to the National League East and the Marlins, and more over to the offensive side with Christian Yelich and the fact that he's sitting out recently with some back stiffness. Although his back is hurting him, it's different now. He did make his spring debut today. And, again, he's been considered day-to-day with his back stiffness, but he has continued working out with the team, which is good, and it doesn't appear to be at any risk more than a day or two of action. So that's all good news for the Marlins. But another player on that team, which we'll get to in a minute, isn't really having such good news. But let's talk about the good news. And Christian Yelich is good things. And I really think that this guy's gap-to-gap power continues to play well in the cavernous Marlins Park. I mean, he recorded his first 300 season, smacked 30 doubles for a second consecutive season in 2015. Yelich has been remarkably consistent in his career, recording a 117 weighted runs created plus in each one. Unfortunately, when Marlins Park gives him doubles, it takes away in home runs, as Yelich has just mustered 3 of his 20 career home runs at his home park. He had 7 last year, and it's a career high of 9. And as long as he is playing in Miami, he'll still get to reach double digits. He makes up for it, though, with loads of ground ball base hits. He hits 4 ground balls for every fly ball. He stole 16 bases in 2015 and has 37 in the past 2 years, and should be expected to keep running with the Marlins going forward. Christian Yelich, he is a double machine. That's all he does. I mean, you know the song, "All We Do Is Win"? All he does is hit doubles. It's crazy. Christian Yelich, he's been consistent. He's been there for the Marlins the past 3 years. When the Marlins haven't necessarily been there for him, when the Marlins have been struggling to find talent, when they've been sort of in this weird phase where they're trying to trade Marcelo Zuna, Jose Fernandez, they come back to sign Y.N. Chen, Christian Yelich has been there. He's been the one that's been there, hitting 30 doubles for 2 consecutive seasons, hitting over 300. What's more reliable than that? It's amazing. And if Christian Yelich can keep up that production, the Marlins will do well. Giancarlo Stanton, people love him. But if you love guys to stay on the field and give your team the best chance to win, you should love Christian Yelich. Okay, Jose Fernandez, he's fantastic. One of the best pitchers in the game when he's on the mound. Giancarlo Stanton, amazing. He's a missile launcher of a human. Great. But why are you on the field all the time? Christian Yelich is there, day to day, putting in the effort, hitting the doubles. Even though his home runs may be down, those doubles make up for it. Even though he may be in a unsuitable home ballpark, which definitely is in Colorado, he makes up for it. He takes a situation that may not be so good and turns it into something good for him, good for the Marlins, good for all of Little Havana, good for all of Miami. I mean, he must be mad that nobody shows up to the games. He must be mad that everybody loves Giancarlo Stanton, Jose Fernandez. I mean, probably more people like Marcelo Ozuna. He's a great player. Looking forward to see what we get out of him. Moving to the pitching side of the Marlins and Carter Capps. And it's sort of sad whenever you hear this. He is visiting, dun-dun-dun, Dr. James Andrews. Again, if you don't know Tommy John surgery is, Dr. James Andrews is the expert of that. And Tommy John happens with the elbow. And Capps right now is out indefinitely. And this really soreness, this elbow soreness, it sort of started during preparation for last Sunday's batting practice. This led to an MRI Thursday that returned inconclusive results. So if you're an optimistic person, look for those inconclusive results because that's what you got to hope for right now. And I think, well, I mean, it's definite right now that he'll have the injury examined by literally one of the world's most highly regarded orthopedic surgeons. I mean, he'll likely be able to determine whether or not Tommy John surgery will be necessary. At this point in time, the outlook looks pretty bleak for this hard-thrown righty. Though Andrews' examination should provide more definitive information. So let's go into some good news about Carter Capps. And really, he had a rough 2014 campaign. He had a horrid spring training. Cast us force in 2014 to begin the season with AAA New Orleans. Despite this, though, he was given another chance to pitch in the majors in May. And good for him, he stayed up for good. The fireballer dominated hitters. He posted an absurd 49.2% strikeout rate, walking just 5.9% of the batters and allowing a slim 168 batting average against. His season, though, was unfortunately cut short by an elbow injury in early August, but he still was able to put an outstanding 1.16 ERA and 0.81 whip thanks to a funky delivery that is impossible to time as a hitter. He was primed to compete with A.J. Ramos for the ninth inning job this spring training. But sadly, his appeal as a speculative closer candidate was really squashed with the word of renewed elbow discomfort to the start of spring training. Again, the initial MRI was inconclusive, so Capps was sent to see Dr. James Andrews for a second opinion. I mean, if one word were to describe this for Carter Capps, it'd be yikes. I mean, it's honestly never good when you're going for a second opinion to see Dr. James Andrews. I mean, it feels like every time somebody goes to see Dr. James Andrews, Tommy John surgery is most likely what will happen. All right, fans, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the American League Central. Talking about the National League East. And the Miami Marlins, with some bad news. Christian Yelich and his back sniffness, which is the minor bad news, and Carter Capps with the big bad news, going to visit Dr. James Andrews. But now, it's time to talk about the American League Central, and more specifically, the Royals, and more specifically, Gerard Dyson, how he is expected to miss at least 2 weeks with a grade 2 oblique strain. And I'm actually getting this news right now. He will not be out 2 weeks. He'll be out 6 weeks. This is according to Rustin Dodd of the Kansas City Star. And really, Dyson was on track to open the season as the Royals as a starting right fielder. But his recovery timetable means he will likely miss opening day and open the season on the disabled list. He'll be the favorite to assume the right field duties upon his return. The manager, Ned Yost, said Paul Orlando will get the chance to be the regular starter there in Dyson's absence. So good news for Orlando, bad news for Dyson. And really, Dyson has spent the last couple of years as the fourth outfielder and the primary pinch runner for the Royals. It was really no different in 2015. He only played in 90 games, but guess what? He still posted 26 steals and 29 attempts. His batting average did decrease a bit from 269 in 2014 to 250, but he struck out less as well. I mean, with a new opening day in the outfield, thanks to Alex Rios leading, Dyson could move his way into a larger role with the Royals in 2016. But he will get a late start to everything in spring training. And this could open up the window of opportunity for teammate Paulo Orlando. I mean, both guys, they've really been the pinch runners. Both guys are wicked fast. Gerard Dyson's the fastest. But Paulo Orlando's pretty good, too. I mean, it feels like in this situation, Alex Rios leaves. Gerard Dyson is confronted with this perfect opportunity. Then this grade 2 oblique strain comes upon spring training. And Paulo Orlando, sitting in the wings, could swoop right in, take the job, and run away with it. Gerard Dyson, I mean, so hopeful. Everybody loves his speed. His speed is game-changing. 90 games, 26 steals. Imagine what he could do, batting four times tonight and getting on base at least one of those times. I mean, you could be thinking of a lot of stolen bases there. It would be nice to see. But sadly, for Royals fans, they're going to have to deal with Paulo Orlando in right field instead. Which isn't that bad of an opportunity for Royals fans to get excited. Because Paulo Orlando is not bad. Just Gerard Dyson was more hyped. People were more excited about Gerard Dyson. Don't get me wrong. Paulo Orlando still has the excitement to him. But Gerard, Mr. Dyson, just goes to another level. Always just a little more. Understand what I'm saying? I hope you are, because I can't answer that question. Let's move to talking about Michael Brantley and how he is right now ahead of schedule as recovery. And actually, Indians manager Terry Francona, he remains optimistic that he is ahead of his initial late April, early May timetable. Although he would not go as far as saying he was optimistic about star outfielder being ready for opening day. And even though Francona came out with this, there is not an adjusted timetable available. But by reading between the lines, it seems like Brantley could return in mid-April. Brantley is not a lock to reach double-digit homers or double-digit steals if he misses too much time. So it would be a bad thing if he only missed a couple of weeks. Unclear how much a shoulder issue will affect him at the plate, though. So his value at the plate should be slightly discounted in that respect as well. So let's talk a little bit more about Michael Brantley. And people call him Dr. Smooth. And really, Mr. Dr. Smooth was not in his best form in 2015. But he was still very good. A bulky back limited him early in the season. and the discomfort lingered until near the end of July. Once the backs got in order, Brantley was operating with surgical precision at the plate. End of the season with a .332 batting average over his final 200 plate appearances. He really has always been a high contact hitter, but a new level in 2015 when he walked more times than he struck out, which helped him keep his OBP above .375 for a second consecutive season, a feat only 5 other players have accomplished. Despite being on base so often, he didn't score 70 runs or steal 20 bases due to the top of the season. Looking for more out of Michael Brantley. Talk about Anibal Sanchez and how he threw a bullpen session today. Oh, my bad. With his triceps issue and also dealing with an illness, he did not throw his bullpen session today, which was scheduled. And honestly, though, these types of delays usually indicate some type of setback. But the good news in this case is that Sanchez is being pushed back for a reason not related to his sore triceps. Sanchez is not a lock to throw tomorrow, but he could still get up on the mound before the weekend comes to a close. And really, Sanchez is coming off the worst season of his major league career. His ERA and his FIP were double those of his elite 2013 numbers, and he came within a hair, of recording a 5-year ERA. The most telling stat, though, of 2015 was his home run to fly ball rate. After boasting below average rates in 2013 and 2014, Sanchez gave up a homer on 16% of his fly balls in 2015. He allowed a career worst 29 home runs after only allowing 21 in the previous 3 seasons combined. He did pitch for several months with a rotator cuff injury that he didn't reveal to anyone at the time, so that could be the reason for his poor 2015. There's really nowhere to go up for Sanchez in 2016 if the rotator cuff is healed. I think he'll be a number 4 or number 5 starter for the Tigers, but hope for the Sanchez of old, a reliable number 2 hurler who can fire strikeouts and deliver a great whip. That's what Tigers fans are hoping for out of Anibal Sanchez. That's what I'm hoping for out of Anibal Sanchez. Because it was just great. 2013, I loved it. Pirates got to the playoffs. Anibal Sanchez throwing those strikeouts, not letting him any walks, not letting any hits. And I'll tell you what, he did not give up 29 home runs either. I know this whole rotator cuff thing. He didn't tell anybody, and then he tells somebody after he does that. Listen to this. I bet he would have told somebody if he did good too. They'd have been like, hey, I had a torn rotator cuff. But guess what? I still dominated. Well, guess what, Anibal? You did not dominate whatsoever. A 5-year in, I don't care about any rotator cuffs. I know it's not me on the hill throwing the ball every 5 days. But 5? That's not good. That's not even, like, mediocre. That's bad. That's awful. He will be a number 4 or 5 starter if he has another 5-year ERA season. You can't be on a major league club nowadays in a starting rotation on a team like the Tigers that's expecting to get back to the playoffs, as expecting to go from, all right, hold on, I got this, first to worst to first to worst to first. Got it, all right? Went from first in the division all the way down to last place, all the way back up to first place is their goal this year. I don't know if they're going to do it. I think they have an improved team, but don't guarantee it. Let's move to Cameron Maybin and how he will be out 4 to 6 weeks with a hairline fracture in his left wrist, a non-displaced hairline fracture, just to get you in the loop of things, if you know the medical difference between displaced and non-displaced. But anyway, I'll talk about how he got this. He left once his game in the third inning after being hit in the wrist with a fastball from Luis Severino. And it appears that the injury is much more serious than everyone initially thought. The timetable suggests opening day is highly unlikely for Maven. This will give Anthony Ghost that starting center field job for the time being, although Maven should claim the bulk of the at-bats once fully healthy. Let's talk about Maven a bit. And after a trade to Atlanta last year, Maven was entrusted with a full-time role for the first time since 2012. Maven went on to set career highs and batting average, home runs, also playing over 20 stolen bases for the first time since 2012. Maven hasn't developed power, and it wasn't just Petco Park keeping his power numbers down. But yes, speed to burn as a capable center fielder, and that should keep him on the field in 2016 and beyond, as he starts another new chapter in his career following an offseason trade to Detroit. His contract issues from early years in the majors have largely been resolved, as his 18.4% strikeout rate was a career best for a full season. Even if he won't hit for power, Maven will run wild when he gets on base, and he should be the batting average black hole past seasons. Honestly, if Maven can get the batting average up, he is fast. He will win those bases. But this hairline fracture in the wrist, I thought it saw his legs, because it was his legs, those stolen bases could be going somewhere south. Our fans, we have to take a break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be moving to the National Central. That is next. We are back on Inside MLB. You were just talking about the American League Central. Gerard Dyson and the fact that he will be out for 6 weeks in what Paulo Orlando will do in the time there. Michael Brantley being ahead of schedule for recovery, but will not be likely for opening day. And then also Anibal Sanchez, his illness preventing him from throwing today. And Cameron Maven being out for 6 weeks with a non-displaced hairline fracture and his left wrist. But now, it's time to move to the National League Central. And we're talking about, first, we're going to be talking about the Cardinals and how Tyler Lyons started for the Grapefruit League opener yesterday for the St. Louis Cardinals. And I thought it was a good step in Tyler Lyons' sort of development, if you know what I mean. And honestly, Lyons is a long shot to make the rotation out of spring training with Adam Wainwright, Michael Walker, Carlos Martinez, Mike Leake, and Jaime Garcia being the likely candidates to fill the Cardinals' rotation. There's always a possibility that injury or poor performance could alter that makeup, but it looks as though Lyons will head into 2016 as a long relief option and occasional spot starter for the Cardinals. And really, Lyons last year, if you're talking about spot starts, he picked up 8 of those for the Cardinals in 2015. He threw 6 innings, making 17 total appearances. The 27-year-old lefty posted a solid 3.75 ERA and 1.23 WHIP while striking out an even 60. With Lance Lynn now out for the 2016 season, it's possible a strong spring could align a spot in the back end of the rotation. Though the Cardinals' acquisition of Mike Leake clouds that picture, Lyons is a good enough picture that he could carve out a full-time rotation role on many MLB teams. But for the Cardinals, the most likely scenario has him spending a full season with the Major League Club in a similar role as last season, moving in and out of the rotation as needed. And if I'm telling Lyons, when Lance Lynn was injured, you're thinking, hey, I got a rotation spot. I mean, it might be sort of awkward in the clubhouse between Tyler Lyons and Mike Leake, because Mike Leake great pitcher. But for Tyler Lyons, he sort of took his job. He didn't take his job completely because he'll still be a long reliever. He'll still make spot starts here and there. But for the most part, I would be pretty mad if I was Mr. Tyler Lyons at Mike Leake. I mean, no, but there has to be a little bit of love lost in that relationship. All right, we're now going to talk about another Cardinals pitcher who will most likely be making the squad at spring training. His name is Carlos Martinez. And today, he faced batters for the first time since injuring his shoulder last September. And I really think he took another solid step in his recovery today. He took a hit while throwing off the mound. Great. He continues to progress in the right direction. But it remains to be seen when he'll make his spring debut. Whenever that day comes, Martinez will need about a month beyond then to build up his stamina for the regular season. So let's talk about Carlos Martinez a bit. And he turned in a terrific 2015 season. It was his first full year in the rotation. He posted a 3.01 ERA, a 1.29 whip, while striking out 184 and 179 two-thirds innings pitched as a 23-year-old. That's fantastic. Martinez, though, he cut his season a couple weeks short due to a shoulder strain, but I think he should be fine for the spring without the added pressure of competing for a rotation spot. His FIP of 3.21 and BABIP of 318 indicate that his 2015 numbers are for real. Martinez could be the Cardinals' ace in the waiting. At just 24 years old, he'll likely slot into the second or third spot in the rotation to start the season. He features a fastball that can approach 100 miles per hour and terrific secondary stuff that should make a 200-plus strikeout campaign in 2016 a strong likelihood. I think he'll be a popular name in St. Louis and as someone pegged to take another step forward. He will be taking a big step forward this season. And I think the signing of Mike Leake, although it may hurt Tyler Lyons, it probably is good for Carlos Martinez. It puts him in more of a comfortable position. Last year, he wasn't really the ace, but he was in a weird position. Without Adam Wainwright there, he didn't have the old guy to guide him. Now, really nice. Let's get to the Brewers. And now Scooter Jeanette will miss time with a shoulder injury. And what does this mean for him? The details regarding the shoulder injury have not yet been released, so it's really not exactly clear how long he'll be signed with a shoulder injury. He should have ample time to recover before opening day, as long as he is only dealing with soreness. But if it turns out he'll be sidelined an extended period of time, Colin Walsh, Darren Cicchini, and Will Middlebrooks would all see their chances of breaking camp with a big club improve. So good news for them. I don't really know the news about Scooter Jeanette yet because it really hasn't been put out there. And I think he has really had a couple of solidly above average seasons as a platoon player. But the Brewers gave Jeanette a full-time role to begin last year. And he promptly collapsed. There's some way I say it. Jeanette still can't have left-handed pitching at all, as he met a putrid 114 batting average mark in just 36 appearances before that experiment was over. Jeanette was acceptable against righties, though, 279 average. And there may still be some value to his skill set concerning most second basemen hit right-handed. But the dream of Jeanette as an impact full-time player seems to be dead. Jeanette is slated to start at second base for the Brewers in 2016, but there will be some more competition. Yadiel Rivera and Jonathan Villar, they will all be in the mix for playing time across the infield. So, But this whole shoulder thing is not good for Scooter Jeanette. It opens up the door, potential for Yadiel Rivera and Jonathan Villar to step in at second base. Not good for Scooter Jeanette. Let's move to the Reds now and how Billy Hamilton was scratched from the lineup with shoulder stiffness. So it is the same shoulder Hamilton surgery on September. Though it's not entirely clear if this is much more than normal soreness that comes as a part of the rehab process. Hamilton has yet to play the field in an exhibition this spring, with the Reds opting to limit him DH until he regains strength in the shoulder. Jose Peraza will get some reps in center field this spring to boost the team's depth behind Hamilton in case he's not ready to go for opening day. He improved on the base paths last year, but he regressed to the plate in 2015. And it's really that latter quality that has us worried about his long-term prospects. But first, I'm an optimistic person. Let's get into the good news. He was 57 for 65 in stolen bases in 114 games after getting caught 23 times in 2014. But those gains were canceled out by his performance at the plate, as his ISO dropped to a paltry 63 in 2015, giving opposing pitchers little reason to avoid challenging him in the strike zone. Thus, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult for him to raise his walk rate above 10% and make him an acceptable leadoff hitter. He spent more time batting ninth than leading off in 2015, and that's unlikely to change in the future. His season ended early with a shoulder injury, but he's currently on track to be ready for the start of opening day. I mean, this whole shoulder thing, it's not good for him. It's not his legs, because his legs are really all he has left. I mean, great, he stole 57 bases, but you can't hit that bat. You're going to have the pitcher hit eighth and you hit ninth. That's unacceptable. I mean, I get that everybody loves him and everybody thinks he has potential, but you got to get better, Billy Hamilton. All right, fans, we have to take a break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the American League West. That's next. We are back in Inside MLB. We've been talking about the National League Central with Tyler Lyons, Carlos Martinez, Scooter Jeanette, and Billy Hamilton. But now it's time to move to the American League West, with Nelson Cruz's spring debut not expected until tomorrow, which sort of has to do with his knee. And he was not in the lineup yesterday for the exhibition game, but Scott Servais does not expect him to make his debut. He did not play today, so he will play tomorrow, according to Scott Servais. And he was, and all of the Mariners were really hopeful that he would not miss any time with this knee injury, but it turns out the setback will cost him a few games over the spring. It seems like the Mariners will simply take the cautious route with Cruz, but he would certainly ease the minds of some worrywarts if he's able to get on the field before the weekend ends. And I think Cruz really far surpassed expectations of probably even the most optimistic last season. He finished second in the majors in homers, first in home run to fly ball ratio with a career high 30.3% mark, and was the only player other than Bryce Harper with at least 35 homers and a 300 average. Saints go field, it's safe to say, didn't slow him down too much. While his road OPS was nearly 100 points higher, an 892 OPS, and 17 players at home plates. What hurt most was the team around him. Cruz had the fewest RBIs in Major League history of any player with at least 44 homers, aside from Barry Bonds in 2003. Inflated by a .351 BABIP, his batting average, his highest since 2010, likely isn't sustainable, as his strikeout rate jumped to an 8-year high of 25%, while his contact rate tied a career low at 72%. Cruz to DH more this year, so it'll be interesting to see what we get out of him. Let's now talk about Sean Tolleson of the Rangers being sidelined by some back spasms, and I know how those feel. Awful, right? They are lower back spasms too, and he did not participate in baseball activities today. His setback does not appear to be serious, but the Rangers will still give him some time off in an effort to alleviate the spasms. He does remain on track to open the season as the team's closer, so that's good news there. And last year, Tolleson emerged from the shadows of, middle, late relief guy to take over the closing duties in May after current Pirate Neftali Feliz faltered. He racked up 35 saves against his two blown saves, both against righties and lefties alike. He flashed solid strikeout and walk rates to go along with the save totals. So expect more of the same if Tolleson enters the season as a closer again as expected. Of some minor concern is Sam Dyson's elevated role. He could possibly be promoted over Tolleson. This was during Texas' brief postseason run. Dyson was providing a pretty good alternative to Tolleson. I think if nothing else, should Tolleson struggle at the outset. Some may want to knock a buck or two off Tolleson's price just to be safe. I mean, there are always the haters out there that are going to go with Dyson. But I think now you can look at Tyson as the well-entrenched closer. But again, the addition of Tom Williamson over the winter provides another option to Tolleson struggle. Tolleson has all the eyes on him right now, and these spasms are not helping him, especially now that Dyson could be in a more fan-friendly role. Tom Williamson acquired. I mean, you have to wonder, Tolleson, if the Rangers don't win you on the closer role. I mean, this may be a plan, but watch out, Sean Tolleson. I was talking about the Angels and how Albert Pujols is scheduled to make his spring debut this weekend on Sunday as the Angels' designated hitter. And manager Mike Scioscia did recently suggest this was a possibility in light of Pujols' progress from offseason foot surgery. The 36-year-old Pujols has increased his on-field work without a setback, holding up to base running and defensive drills. Great. The Angels will continue to be extremely cautious, but Pujols' goal is to be ready for opening day, which is better than a lot of people thought originally. I mean, let's talk about last year for a minute. I mean, people consider what he did to be unexplainable. They just didn't understand. He reached a 40 home run plateau for the first time since 2010. The 35-year-old dealt with what had become customary aches and pains along the way, but still played in 157 games at 35 years old. The wear and tear, though, did seem to take a toll in the second half for the second consecutive season, as he tallied an OPS of just 707 with 14 homers after the All-Star break. While there's no arguing with the power, the batting average was a black mark, sinking to a career low 244. a 217 batting average on balls in play. It's like the major culprit. But it's worth noting that his line drive percentage fell to just under 16%, representing the second lowest mark of his career. Pujols underwent foot surgery this winter, and while he hasn't been ruled out for opening day, be wary for perpetually ailing slugger who has shown a tendency to taper off after all it starts in recent years. So what I expect after our Pujols is pretty good 2015. I expect him to get off to a good start. No doubt. I expect him to falter again in the second half. It's predictable now. I mean, better than it was in 2014. But watch out. Al Pujols will be an interesting player at 36 years old in 2016. Our fans, we'll take a break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to be going to our last division, and it's around the horn to the National League West. All right, so we've been talking about Nelson Cruz getting his spring debut tomorrow. We've been talking about Sean Tolson's back spasms and Albert Pujols making his debut on Sunday. So a lot of debuts in the West in one injury. Notable. So let's move now to the National League side of the West. I want to start with how the Dodgers' Julio Urias will be topping 100 innings in 2016. And another thing is he did throw a bullpen session today for the first time since tweaking his groin early in the week, which is good news. He did make it to the bullpen session today without any problems. He should be able to return to full action soon, but we'll consider him day-to-day until he returns to game action. Urias just turned 19 in August, but despite his youth, he's on the cusp of the big leagues. After making it all the way to AAA last year, overall between multiple levels, Urias tallied 80 and a third innings and posted a 3.81 ERA and an excellent 88-22 strikeout to walk ratio. The ERA was severely impacted by his final 3 rounds of the season, in which Urias surrendered 15 runs in just 5 1/3 innings. Prior to that, his ERA sat at just 2.28. Likely, he was a bit tired down the stretch and off mechanically as a result. So we shouldn't hold his poor finish against him too much. Urias has never topped 90 innings in a season as the Dodgers continue to treat his development with extreme caution. So don't expect much more than 120 innings as in the season. How many of those innings come at the big league level remains to be determined, but it's probably best to not count on a big league debut until September 2016 at their earliest. We also probably won't see him approaching 200 big league innings until the 2018 season. Urias, though, remains arguably baseball's number one pitching prospect. Julio Urias is great. I mean, not many people are 19 in a big league camp. It just doesn't happen. Most people graduate high school, you know, at 18 or 19. So imagine this. Senior in high school, being in a big league camp with the Dodgers. I mean, that must be a bit overwhelming for the young stud out of Mexico. Sorry. You have to imagine, though. He's 19 years old. And You have all these people managing him. You have all these people counting on you. He has a whole life ahead of him. What if this doesn't work out? I want it to work out for the Dodgers and for baseball's sake and for my sake. Because I like to see good pitchers. I like to see the next talent of baseball coming up. But he's 19 years old. It's crazy. And people were talking about him already in 2014. I mean, he hasn't even been playing for that long in the Dodgers organization. He's been playing his whole life. But, like, the spotlight was first on him in age 17. Age 18, it was a little bit more. Now at age 19, oh my goodness, it's higher than ever. But I don't think he will debut at age 19. I just don't think it'll happen. ETA, earliest ETA, 20 years old, in September. I mean, if the Dodgers are out of the race, which I don't see happening, that could make it a good story. Yeah, bring him up, age 19, see what he can do. But you never know with injuries. He's a good guy. Good player of Mexico. Good player. Very young. Very talented. Number one pitching boss pick in baseball. And the Dodgers are just licking at their chops. They want to see him cusp the 280 mark. They want to be the next Clayton Kershaw. Don't expect him to do that until 2018 there. Let's talk about Brett Anderson now. And how he will be out 3 to 5 months. And this is continuing story right now for Brett Anderson. And the reason he'll be out 3 to 5 months is because of a bulging disc in his back. He will undergo back surgery this coming Tuesday. He'll then begin a rehab process. That'll keep him sidelined until sometime this summer. I think Anderson's injury greatly improves Alex Wood's chances of opening the season in the Dodgers' rotation. And also gives both Michael Bolsinger and Brandon Beachy more of an opportunity to lock down the fifth starter job. It just does. And this coming year, he signed to a 1-year incentive-laden deal. This was last winter. He's really often injured, so the incentive part of the deal really made sense. And it gave the Dodgers everything they could have asked and perhaps even more last year. Sand career highs in starts and innings, while posting a 3.69 ERA and 1.33 WHIP. His strikeout per nine ratio was career low, but his ground ball to fly ball, was only 4.5, and he maintained a solid control. His 90.7 mile per hour average fastball was really in line with his career average, and though he finished on a down note in Game 3 of the NLDS against the Mets. Just a bad start. It really shouldn't detract from what was overall a solid season. It was impressive for me to see what he was able to do as a relatively miscast number three starter. I mean, Hyunjin Ryu was injured, Brian McCarthy was injured. He wasn't expected to be at that point. He accepted the club's 1-year, $15.8 million qualifying offer this November, one of the few to do so. And he looks to continue to rebuild his value in hopes of making a multi-year deal next winter. I mean, this guy is usually injured. The Dodgers bring him in on he's amazing. I love it. Good for Brett Anderson. But this is sad, though. So we move to our final player of the day as we are winding down on Inside MLB. And it is Kelby Tomlinson and how he will be the leading candidate for the primary backup spot at shortstop should Brandon Crawford get injured or something happens to him. And he has gone off to a good start with his first hit of the spring and some smooth plays at shortstop, which is good. He broke out in 2015, filling in for Joe Panik. He had for a 303 average, 170 at-bats. I mean, with Panik healthy for the start of the 2016, the Giants will like Tomlinson to be their primary backup down the middle. He won't have much value if Crawford and Panik are healthy, but he's an intriguing player if either went down due to Tomlinson's solid bat and plus speed. And last year, he was Joe Panik's Twitter replacement player. Joe Panik was on the DL, and it gave Tomlinson an opportunity in early August. His 12th-round pick back in 2011. I think he displayed decent contact skills. He displayed a proficiency on the base path throughout his minor league career, including at the upper levels during the first 4 months of 2015. While he struck out more often and was only 5-for-9 stolen base attempts with the big league club, his audition goes down as a success. Put it on the check mark. Because he beat up left-handed pitching. The power surprised him. Nobody expected him. Tomlinson had only 8 total home runs in 5 seasons. But the 25-year-old has experience playing shortstop and could be in the running for a utility job this spring. Toby Tomlinson is in a perfect position right now. He's in the backer pool. He can develop his talent still. And Brandon Crawford goes down, Joe Panik goes down, or they need a day off. Boom. Toby Tomlinson. Decent contact skills. Good on the base paths. Showing the power of perspective. It'll be interesting to see what we can get out of Toby Tomlinson in 2016. It really will. Wow. The show goes fast. I mean, we're moving along, right? The buzzer. I like the new buzzer. It's a nice little sprinkle of salt. Sprinkle of sugar on the show. It's nice for me. And, I mean, what a week. Got 3 shows in. Baseball's back. The Pirates, they tied to the Twins today. They're actually on TV today. I loved watching it. We had something in school where, you know, you can have your phone out. So I watched again during lunch. Watched again when the walk comes from school. Then got home. The Twins took the lead 2-1 in the ninth. Pirates tied it, but it ended in a tie. You know, spring training has its ends. See a lot of young guys. See a lot of ties. But what can you do? I mean, I'd like it to go to extra innings. It'd be an interesting topic to get to in another day. I just don't think. When has baseball ever ended in a tie? I know a tie is better than loss. That's what everybody told me. Tie is better than loss. I know they came back, but I just would have loved if Adam Frazier came through. Adam Frazier came through. That would have been just so big. So big. But he didn't do it. I'm happy with the tie. Move to 1-2-1. Hopefully they can get back to 500 tomorrow in the Grapefruit League. I just want them to win a Grapefruit League. I know people may call me crazy for caring so much about spring training. But come on. Just win the Grapefruit League. 15 teams. This Pirate Club is capable of winning it. I've been listening all week. I like what they have. I mean, they're young guys. They're impressive. I think they are pretty good against the other young guys. Because when the other teams bring their young guys, our young guys beat their young guys. And we all came back yesterday, too. Down 10-2, made it 10-8. That was impressive. What can I say? Impressive stuff. If you're sick of me talking about Pirates Grapefruit League baseball, good thing I didn't talk about it for the whole show, because I could have talked about it for the whole show, but I didn't. And all the other spring training teams, I mean, it's exciting. Just seeing baseball on TV, hearing on the radio. I love hearing on the radio in spring. It's amazing. Make sure to tune in Monday, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. My name is Benson Fector. Head over to our website, MLBinside.com. Thank you for tuning in Inside MLB. We will see you Monday night. Have a wonderful weekend.